Hello and welcome to this episode of the Beyond podcast and this live recording of the opening of A Mirror for Magistrates, or The Fall of Richard II, recorded live at the Key Theatre on Thursday the 11th of April, 2024. For the second week in a row, I've decided not to add anything to a live recording, beyond trying to tidy up some of the minor errors or live sounds, partly because the dress rehearsal failed to record properly, so I only had the live take to work with. This adaptation of the opening of A Mirror for Magistrates doesn't include the poem on the two Rogers, make of that what you will, and it had a few verses removed, and I semi-dramatised the editorial meeting. But otherwise it covers the opening of the book reasonably closely. The event was followed by a post-show discussion, coming to the pod shortly. In A Mirror for Magistrates, The Fall of Richard II was Stephen Longstaff as Henry Lord Stafford summoning the ghost of Thomas of Woodstock. Liza Graham as George Ferrers summoning the ghost of Robert Tressilian. Myself, Robert Crichton, as William Baldwin, summoning the ghost of Lord Mowbray, and Kit Maguire, as Sir Thomas Challoner, summoning the ghost of Richard II. But I will leave you now with the live introduction made by Valentina Vinci. Enjoy.
Good evening, dear audience and listeners, and welcome to this performance of The Fall of Richard II, based on the opening of A Mirror for Magistrates. Please let me introduce you to William Baldwin, the central author of A Mirror for Magistrates, who will guide you through the fall of Richard II.
How does a book of history come into being? How do we start? What is even the first word? A Mirror for Magistrates, a work I helped bring into being, didn't come from nothing. It was already a kind of sequel, and also something new and original, and somehow I helped make that happen. Who am I? I'm William Baldwin. At the time, the attempted author of many works, mostly suppressed during the reign of our last monarch, Queen Mary I, including the first version of this Mirror for Magistrates, which, through the means of my Lord Stafford...
Evening, Baldwin.
The first part was licensed and imprinted the first year of the reign of this, our most noble and virtuous Queen, Elizabeth I. Its genesis came about, something like this. When my printer had purposed with himself to print Lydgate's Book of the Fall of Princes, he was counselled to have the story continued from where as
Boccaccio.
From where the original author Boccaccio had left off unto this present time, chiefly of such as Fortune had dallied with here in this island, which might be as a mirror for all men as well noble as others to show the due reward of all kind of vices. Which liked him so well that he required me to take pains therein. because it was a matter passing my skill and wit, and more thankless than gainful to meddle in, I refused utterly to undertake it. Except I might have the help of such as in wit were apt, in learning aloud and in judgment and estimation, able to wield and furnish so weighty an enterprise, and shortly after, diverse learned men, whose many gifts need few praises, consented to take upon them part of the travail.
They're late.
Yes. This is Henry, 10th Baron Stafford, whose income and status was not quite as great as his title suggests. He was the first and perhaps most experienced of our authors. And when certain of them were gathered together to devise thereupon, I resorted unto them, bearing with me the Book of Boccas.
Boccaccio.
Boccaccio, translated by John Lydgate, a monk of Bury St. Edmunds, for the better observation of his order.
Behold this great prince, Edward the Second, which of divers lands lord was and king.
Now this so is George Ferrers, one time in the service of Thomas Cromwell, and a former student of the law at the Inns of Court, whose character will be well known to readers of my recent novel, Beware the Cat.
With a brooch in his fundament.
Yes, next.
See how Richard of Albion the king, which in his time rich and glorious was, sacred with habit, with crown, and with ring, yet fell his fortune so, and
eats his hate.
Lo, Charles of noble France the king.
Next.
So now this lusty Duke of Orleans.
Next. Which, although we liked well, yet, would it not serve?
It's all a bit old-fashioned.
Yes, and seeing that both Boccas and Lydgate were dead...
Can't we do something a bit different?
Yes, we need a focus for the work.
They all agreed that I should use a Boccas room, and the wretched princes complain unto me. And they took upon themselves, every man for his part, to be sundry personages, and in their behalves to bewail unto me their grievous chances, heavy destinies, and woeful misfortunes.
But who will our characters be?
This is Sir Thomas Challoner, who was a son of a mercer, studied at Cambridge and Lincoln's Inn, has been about the court through a number of monarchs, and at this time was an ambassador.
We need to do a bit more research if this is going to work.
Well, so we opened such books of chronicles as we had there present, and Master Ferrers, after he had found where Boccas had...
Boccaccio!
Had left, which was about the end of King Edward III's reign, to begin the matter, said thus.
Seeing the printer's mind is to have us follow where Lydgate left, I will begin at the time of Richard II, a time as unfortunate as the ruler therein. And for as much, friend Baldwin, as it shall be your charge to note and pen orderly the whole process, I will... so far as my memory and judgment serveth, somewhat further you in the truth of the story. And therefore, omitting the ruffle made by Jack Straw
what?
And his men, and the murder of many notable men which thereby happened...
Jack Straw is of singular importance.
For Jack, as you know, was but a poor prince.
You may be.
I will begin with a notable example, which within a while after ensued. And... although he be no great prince, yet, sithens he had a princely office, I will take upon me the miserable person of Sir Robert Tressilian, Chief Justice of England, thereby to warn all of his authority and profession to take heed of wrong judgments, and misconstruing of laws to serve a prince's turns, which rightfully brought them to a miserable end, which they may justly lament, in manner ensuing.
Conjure us, then, Ferrers, of the fall of Robert Tressilian, Chief Justice of England, and other his fellows, for misconstruing the laws and expounding them to serve the prince's affections.
In the rueful register of mischief and mishap, Baldwin, we beseech thee with our names to begin, whom unfriendly fortune did train into a trap when we thought our state most stable to have been. So lightly lose they all which all do ween to win. Learn by us, ye lawyers and judges of this land, upright and uncorrupt in doom alway to stand. and print it for a precedent to remain forever. Enroll it and record it in tables made of brass, engrave it in marble that may be raised never, where judges and justicers may see, as in a glass, what the fee is for falsehood, and what our wages was, who for our prince's pleasure corrupt with meed and awe, wittingly and willfully did wrest the sense of law. Behold me, unfortunate foreman of this flock, Tressilian, sometime chief justice of this land, by descent a gentleman. No stain was in my stock. Lockton, Holt, Belknap, and others of my band, whom the law of England had wholly in our hand, under the second Richard, prince of great estate, to whom froward fortune gave a foul checkmate. In the common laws our skill was so profound, our credit and authority such, and so esteemed, that whatso we concluded was taken for a ground, allowed was for law whatso to us best seemed. Life, death, lands, goods, and all by us was deemed. Whereby with easy pain so great gain we did get, that everything was fish that came unto our net. At sessions and at sizes we bore the stroke and sway, in patents and commissions of quorum alway chief, so that to whether side soever we did weigh, were it right or wrong, it passed without reprief. We let hang the true man sometime to save a thief. Of gold and of silver our hands were never empty. Offices, farms, fees fell to us in great plenty. But what thing may suffice unto the greedy man? The more he hath in hold, the more he doth desire. Happy and twice happy is he that wisely can content himself with that which reason doth require, and moileth for no more than for his needful hire. But greediness of mind doth never keep the size, which though it have enough, yet doth it not suffice. For as dropsy patients drink and still be dry, whose unstanched thirst no liquor can allay, and drink they never so much, yet still for more they cry, so covetous catchers toil both night and day, greedy and ever needy, prowling for their prey. Endless thirst of gold, corrupter of all laws, what mischief is on mold whereof thou art not cause? Thou madest us to forget the faith of our profession when sergeants we were sworn to serve the common law, which was that in no point we should make digression from approved principles in sentence nor in saw. But we unhappy wretches, without all dread and awe of the judge eternal, for world's vain promotion, more to man than to God, did bear our whole devotion. The laws we interpreted and statutes of the land, not truly by the text, but nully by a glose. And words that were most plain, when they by us were scanned, we turned by construction like a Welshman's hose, whereby many one both life and land did lose. Yet this we made a mean to mount aloft on mules. To seem kings in all points, men must some while break rules. Thus climbing and contending alway to the top, from high unto higher, and then to be most high, the honey dew of fortune so fast on us did drop, that from King Richard's council we came to be full nigh, to creep into whose favor we were full fine and sly. Alway to his profit when any word might sound, that way, all were it wrong, the sense we did expound, so working law like wax. The subject was not sure of life, lands, nor goods, but at the prince's will, which caused his kingdom the shorter time to dure. For claiming power absolute both to save and spill, the prince thereby presumed his people for to pill, and set his lusts for law, and had reason's place. No more but hang and draw. There was no better grace. The king, thus transcending the limits of the law, not reigning but raging by youthful insolence, wise and worthy persons did from the court withdraw. There was no grace nor place for ancient prudence. Presumption and pride, with excessive expense, possessed the palace and pillaged the country.
Thus all went to rack, unlike of remedy. The barony of England, not bearing this abuse, conspiring with the commons, assembled by assent, and seeing neither reason nor treaty, could induce the king in anything his rigor to relent. Maugre all his might, they called a parliament. Frank and free, for all men without check to debate, as well for weal public as for the prince's state, in which parliament much things was proponed concerning the regally and rights of the crown, by reason King Richard, which was to be moaned, full little regarding his honor and renown, by sinister advice had turned all upside down, for surety of whose state them thought it did behove his corrupt counselors from him to remove, among whom Robert Vere, called Duke of Ireland, with Michael de la Pole of Suffolk, new-made earl. Of York also the archbishop dispatched were out of hand, with Bramber, of London mayor, a most uncourteous churl. Some, learned in the law, in exile they did hurl, but I, poor Tressilian, because I was the chief, was damned to the gallows most vilely as a thief. Lo, the fine of falsehood, the stipend of corruption. Fie on stinking lucre of all unright the lure. Ye judges and ye justicers, let my most just punition teach you to shake off bribes and keep your hands pure. Riches and promotion be vain things and unsure. The favor of a prince is an untrusty sway, but justice hath a fee that shall remain alway. What glory can be greater before God or man than by the paths of equity in judgment to proceed, so duly and so truly the laws always to scan, that right may take his place without reward or meed? Set apart all flattery and vain worldly dreed. Take God before your eyes, the just judge supreme. Remember well your reckoning at the day extreme. Abandon all affray. Be soothfast in your saws. Be constant and careless of mortal men's displeasure. With eyes shut and hands close, you should pronounce the laws. Esteem not worldly hire. Think, there is a treasure more worth than gold or stone 1,000 times in value. Repose for all such as righteousness ensue, whereof you cannot fail. The promise made is true. If some, in latter days, had called unto mind the fatal flaw of us for wresting of the right, the statutes of this land they should not have defined so willfully and wittingly against the sentence quite. But though they escaped pain, the fault was nothing light. Let them that come hereafter both that and this compare. And weighing well the end, they will, I trust, beware.
When Master Ferrars had finished this tragedy, which seemed not unfit for the persons touched in the same, Henry Stafford said as followeth.
Although it be not greatly appertinent to our purpose, yet I find that before this, of whom Master Ferrars hath yet spoken, there were two Mortimers. The one hanged in Edward III's time, out of our date. Another slain in Ireland, in Richard II's time, a year before the fall of these justices.
We can't start going backwards. We'll never get done.
But whose history saith it is notable and the example fruitful, were pity to overpass it.
As it is best to place each person in his order, let us take the chronicles and mark them as they come, for there are many worthy to be noted, though not to be treated of.
First, the Lord Morrith, a Scottishman, who took his death's wound through a stroke lent him by the Earl of Nottingham, who he challenged at the tilt.
Omit him.
And also the fat Prior of Tiptree, pressed to death with throng of people upon London Bridge at the Queen's entry.
Noted.
But to omit them, we have come to the Duke of Gloucester, the King's uncle, a man much minding the common weal and yet at length miserably made away. In whose person, if Henry will read, and if ye will give ear, ye shall hear what I think meet to be said.
Henry, if you will oblige.
What's the title of this tragedy?
how Sir Thomas of Woodstock, Duke of Gloucester, uncle to King Richard II, was unlawfully murdered.
Whose state is established in seeming most sure, and so far from danger of fortune's blast, as by the compass of man's conjecture no brazen pillar may be fixed more fast, yet wanting the stay of prudent forecast, when froward fortune list for to frown, may in a moment turn upside down. In proof whereof, O Baldwin, take pain to hearken a while to Thomas of Woodstock, addressed in presence his fate to complain, in the forlorn hope of the English stock, son to King Edward, third of that name, and second to none in glory and fame. This noble father, to maintain my state with Buckingham earldom, did me endow. Both nature and fortune to me were great, denying nothing which they might allow. Their sundry graces in me did so flow as beauty, strength, high favour and fame, who may of God more wish than the same. Brothers we were, to the number of seven, I being the sixth and youngest but one. More royal race was not under heaven, more stout and more stately of stomach and person, princes all peerless in each condition, namely, Sir Edward, called the Black Prince. When hath England the like, before either since? But what of all this, any man to assure, in state uncareful of fortune's variance? Sith daily and hourly we see it, in Ewer, that where most cause is of affiance, even there is found most weak assurance. Let none trust fortune, but follow reason. Often we see in trust is treason. This proverb, in proof overtrue, I tried, finding high treason in place of high trust, and most fault of faith where I most affied, being by them that should have been just traitorously entrapped ere I could mistrust. Your wretched world, but it is to trust thee. Now then that will learn, now hearken to me. After King Edward III's decease, succeeded my nephew Richard to reign, who for his glory and honours increase with princely wages did me entertain, against the Frenchman to be his chieftain. So, passing the seas with royal puissance, with God and St. George, I invaded France, wasting the country with sword and with fire, overturning towns, high castles and towers. Like Mars, god of war, inflamed with ire, I forced the Frenchmen to abandon their bowers. Wherever we matched, I won at all hours, suchwise visiting both city and village, that always my soldiers were laden with pillage. With honour and triumph was my return, was none more joyous than young King Richard, who, minding more highly my state to adorn, with Gloucester dukedom did me reward. And after in marriage I was preferred to a daughter of Bowen, an earl honourable, by whom I was of England high constable. Thus hoisted so high on fortune's wheel, as one on a stage attending a play, seeth not on which side the scaffold doth reel, till timber and poles and all flee away, so fared it by me. For day by day, as honour increased, I looked still higher, not seeing the danger of my fond desire. For when fortune's flood ran with full stream, I, being a duke, descended of kings, constable of England, chief officer in the realm, abused with esperance these vain things. I went without feet and flew without wings, presuming so far upon my high state, that dread set apart, my prince I would mate. For whereas all kings have counsel of their choice, to whom they refer the rule of the land, with certain familiars in whom to rejoice for pleasure or profit, as the case shall stand, I, not bearing this, would needs take in hand, maugre his will, those persons to disgrace, such as I thought fit to appoint in their place. But to my purpose, I being once bent towards the achieving of my attemptate, four bold barons were of mine assent, by oath and alliance fastly confederate. First, Henry of Derby, an earl of estate. Richard of Arundel and Thomas of Warwick, with Mowbray, Earl Marshal, a man most warlike. At Ratcot Bridge assembled our band. The commons in clusters came to us that day to daunt Robert Vere, then Duke of Ireland, by whom King Richard was ruled all way. We put him to flight and break his array. Then, Mowbray the King, his leave or assent, by constable's power we called a parliament. Where not in robes, but with bastards bright we came, for to parle of the public weal, confirming our quarrel with main and with might. With swords and no words we tried our appeal, instead of reason declaring our zeal, and whomso we knew with the king in good grace, plainly we deprived him of power and of place. Some with short process were banished the land, some executed with capital pain, whereof whoso lift the whole to understand in the parliament roll, it appeareth plain. And further how stoutly we did the king strain, the rule of his realm wholly to resign to the order of those whom we did assign. But note the sequel of such presumption. After we had these miracles wrought, the king, inflamed with indignation, that to such bondage he should be brought, suppressing the ire of his inward thought, studied naught else but how he might be highly revenged of his high despite. For as fire ill-quenched will up at a start, and sores not well salved do break out anew, so hatred hidden in an ireful heart, where it hath long season to brew, upon every occasion doth easily renew, not failing at last if it be not let to pay large usury besides the due debt. Even so it fared by this friendship feigned, outwardly sound and inwardly rotten. For when the king's favour in seeming was gained, all old displeasures forgiven and forgotten, even then at a sudden the shaft was shotten, which pierced my heart void of mistrust. Alas, that a prince should be so unjust. For lying at Pleshy, myself to repose, by reason of sickness which held me full sore, the king, espying me apart from those with whom I had confederated in band before, thought it not meet to track the time more, but glad to take me at such advantage, came to salute me with friendly visage, who, having a band bound to his bent, by colour of kindness to visit his eam, took time to accomplish his cruel intent, and, in a small vessel, down by the stream, conveyed me to Calais, out of the realm, where without process or doom of my peers, not nature, but murder, abridged my years. This act was odious to God and to man. Yet, rigour to cloak in habit of reason, by crafty compass devise they can, Articles 9 of right heinous treason, were doom after death, is sure out of season, for whoever saw so strange a precedent as execution done before judgment. Thus hate harboured in depth of mind, by sought occasion burst out of new, and cruelty abused the law of kind, when that the nephew the uncle slew. Alas, King Richard, sore mayest thou rue, which by this fact preparest the way of thy hard destiny to hasten the day. For blood asketh blood as guerdon due, and vengeance for vengeance is just reward. O righteous God, thy judgments are true, for look what measure we other award, the same for us again is prepared. Take heed, ye princes, by examples past. Blood will have blood, either first or last.
Oh, When Lord Stafford had ended Ferrer's fruitful tragedy, we turned...
Is it my turn?
When Lord Stafford had ended Ferrer's fruitful...
Nearly there.
When Lord Stafford had...
I can't find the last page.
Because no man was ready with another, I, having perused the story which came next, said, well, because you shall not say my masters, but that I will in somewhat do my part, I will, under your correction, declare the tragedy of the Lord Mowbray, the chief worker of the Duke of Gloucester's destruction, who, to admonish all counsellors to beware of flattering princes, may lament his vices in manner following.
How the Lord Mowbray, promoted by King Richard II, was by him banished the realm and died miserably in exile.
Though sorrow and shame abash me to rehearse, my loathsome life and death of due deserved, yet that the pains thereof may other pierce to leave the like, lest they be likely served. Ah, Baldwin, mark, I will show thee how I swerved, dissembling envy and flattery, bane that be of all their hosts, have showed their power on me. I blame not fortune, though she did her part, and true it is she can do little harm. She guideth good, she hampered not the heart. A virtuous mind is safe from every charm. Vice, only vice with her stout, strengthless arm doth cause the heart to evil to incline, which I, alas, do find too true by mine. For where by birth I came of noble kind, the Mowbray's heir, a famous house and old fortune, I thank her, was to me so kind that of my prince I had whatso I would. Yet neither of us was much to other hold, for I, through flattery, abused his wanton youth, and his fond trust augmented my untruth. He made me first the Earl of Nottingham, the Marshal of the realm, in which estate the peers and people jointly to me came with sore complaint against them that of late made officers had brought the king in hate by making sail of justice, right and law, and living naught without all dread or awe. I gave them aid these evils to redress and went to London with an army strong and caused the king, against his will oppress by cruel death all such as led him wrong. The Lord Chief Justice suffered these among. So did the steward of his household head. The Chancellor scaped, for he aforehand fled. These wicked men thus from the king removed, who best as pleased succeeded in their place. For which both king and commons much us loved, but chiefly I withal stood high in grace. The king eschewed my reed in every case, when self-love bred. For glory maketh proud, and pride I looketh alone to be allowed. Wherefore, to the end I might alone enjoy the king's goodwill, I made his lust my law, and where of late I laboured to destroy such flattering folk as thereto stood in awe, now learned I among the rest to claw. For pride is such, if it be kindly caught, as stroyeth good and stirreth up every nought. Pride pricketh men to flatter for the prey, to oppress and poll for maintenance of the same, to malice such as match uneths it may. And, to be brief, pride doth the heart inflame, to fire what mischief any fraud may frame, and ever at length the evils by it wrought confound the worker and bring him unto naught. Behold in me due proof of every part, for pride first forced me, my prince, to flatter so much that whatsoever pleased his heart, were it never so evil, I thought a lawful matter, which caused the lords afresh against him clatter, because he had his holds beyond sea sold, and seen his soldiers of their wages polled, though all these ills were done by my ascend. Yet such was luck that each man deemed no. For see, the Duke of Gloucester for me sent, with other lords whose hearts did bleed for woe to see the realm so fast a ruin go, in fault whereof, they said, the two dukes were, the one of York, the other of Lancaster, on whose remove fro being about the king we all agree, and swear a solemn oath. And while the rest provided for this thing, I flatter I to win the praise of troth, wretch that I was, break faith and promise both. For I bewrayed the king their whole intent, for which unwares they all were ta'en and shent. Thus was the warder of the commonweal, the Duke of Gloucester, guiltless made away. With other more wretch I so to deal, who through untruth their trust did ill betray. Yet by this means obtained I my prey. Of king and dukes I found for this such favour as made me Duke of Norfolk for my labour. But see how pride and envy jointly run, because my prince did more than me prefer Sir Henry Bolingbroke, the eldest son of John of Gaunt, the Duke of Lancaster. Proud I, that would alone be blazing star, envied this earl, for naught save that the shine of his deserts did glister more than mine. For when this Henry, Earl of Hereford, saw what spoil the king made of the noble blood, and that, without all justice, cause or law, to suffer him, so he thought not sure nor good. Wherefore, to me, two-faced in a hood, as touching this, he fully brake his mind as to his friend that should remedy find. But I, although I knew my prince did ill, so that my heart abhorred sore the same, yet mischief so through malice led my will to bring this earl from honour into shame, and toward myself my sovereign to inflame, that I bewrayed his words unto the king, not as a reed, but as a most heinous thing. Thus, where my duty bound me to have told my prince his fault, and willed him to refrain, through flattery, lo, I did his ill uphold, which turned at length both him and me to pain. Woe, woe to kings whose counsellors do feign. Woe, woe to realms where such are put in trust as leave the law to serve the prince's lust. For when the earl was charged with my plaint, he flat denied that any part was true, and claimed by arms to answer his attaint. And I, by use that Wally feats well knew, to his desire incontinently drew, wherewith the king did seem right well content, as one that passed not much with whom it went. At time and place appointed, we appeared at all points armed, to prove our quarrels just. And when our friends on each part had us cheered, and that the heralds bade us do our lust with spear in rest, we took a course to just. But ere our horses had run half their way, a shout was made. The king did bid us stay. And for to avoid the shedding of our blood with shame and death, which one must needs have had, the king, through counsel of the lords, thought good to banish both. Which judgment straight was rad. No marvel then, though both were rough and sad, but chiefly I that was exiled for A. My enemy stranged but for 10 years day. The date expired when by this doleful doom I should depart to live in banished band, on pain of death to England not to come. I went my way. The king seized in his hand my offices, my honours, goods and land, to pay the due, as openly he told, of mighty sums which I had from him polled. See, Baldwin, see the salary of sin. Mark with what meed vile vices are rewarded through pride and envy. I lose both kith and kin, and for my flattering plaint so well regarded, exile and slander are justly me awarded. My wife and heir lack lands and lawful right, and me their lord made Dame Diana's knight. If these mishaps at home be not enough, adjoin to them my sorrows in exile. I went to Almain first, a land right rough, in which I found such churlish folk and vile as made me loathe my life each other while. There, lo, I learned what it is to be a guest abroad and what to live at home in rest, for they esteem no one man more than each. They use as well the lackey as the lord. And like their manners, churlish is their speech. Their lodging hard, their board to be abhorred. Their pleated garments herewith well accord, all jagged and frounced with diverse colours decked. They swear, they curse, and drink till they be flecked. They hate all such as these their manners hate, which reason would no wise man should allow. With these I dwelt, lamenting mine estate, till at the length they had got knowledge how I was exiled, because I did avow a false complaint against my trusty friend, for which they named me traitor. Still unend, that what for shame and what for weariness I stole fro thence and went to Venice town, when as I found more ease and friendliness, but greater grief. For now the great renown of Bolingbroke, whom I would have put down, was waxed so great in Britain and in France that Venice through each man did him advance. Or ere I had sojourned there a year, strange tidings came, he was to England gone, had ta'en the king, and that which touched him near imprisoned him with other of his fone, and made him yield up his crown and throne. When I these things for true by search had tried, grief gripped me so, I pined away and died. Now, this tragical example was of all the company well liked.
One moment, Baldwin.
We have found a doubt herein.
There is a wide diversity in stories of the Chronicles.
Whereas Master Hall, which in this story you chiefly followed, maketh Mowbray accuser and Bolingbroke appellee, Master Fabian reporteth the manner quite contrary, and that by the report of good authors, making Bolingbroke the accuser and Mowbray the appellee.
Which matter, sith it is more hard to decise than needful to our purpose, I defer to the determination of the heralds. This doubtless let pass.
Oh,
but,
on.
I mean, Fabian versus... Well, you cannot do that.
I would gladly say somewhat for King Richard himself.
Ah, yeah.
And therefore, imagine, Baldwin, that you see him, all to be mangled with blue wounds, lying pale and wan, naked upon the cold stones in Paul's Church. the people standing round about him, and Richard making his moan in this sort.
Tell us how King Richard II was for his evil governess miserably murdered in prison.
Happy is the prince that hath in wealth the grace to follow virtue, keeping vices under. But woe to him whose will hath wisdom's place, for whoso renteth right and law asunder, on him at length, lo, all the world shall wonder. High birth, choice fortune, force nor princely mace can warrant king or kaiser for the case. Shame sueth sin as raindrops do the thunder. Let princes, therefore, virtuous life embrace, that wilful pleasures cause them not to blunder. Behold my hap. See how the seely rout do gaze upon me, and each to other say, see where he lieth, for whom none late might rout. Lo, how the power, the pride, and rich array of mighty rulers lightly fade away. The king, which erst kept all the realm in doubt, the veriest rascal now dare check and lout. What mould be kings made of but carrion clay? Behold his wounds, how blue they be about, which while he lived thought never to decay. Methinks I hear the people thus devise. And therefore, Baldwin, sith thou wilt declare how princes fell to make the living wise, my vicious story in no point see thou spare, but paint it out that rulers may beware good counsel, law, or virtue to despise, for realms have rules, and rulers have a size, which if they keep not, doubtless, say I dare, that either's griefs the other shall agrise, till one be lost, the other brought to care. I am a king that ruled all by lust, that forced not of virtue, right, or law, but alway put false flatterers most in trust, ensuing such as could my vices claw, by faithful counsel passing not a straw. What pleasure pricked, thought I to be just. I set my mind to feed, to spoil, to just. 3 meals a day could scarce content my maw, and all to augment my lecherous mind that must to Venus' pleasures alway be in awe. For maintenance whereof, my realm I polled, through subsidies, sore fines, loans, many oppressed, blank charters, oaths, and shrifts not known of old, for which my subjects did me sore detest. I also made away the town of Brest, my fault wherein, because mine uncle told, for princes' vices may not be controlled, I found the means his bowels to unbreast. The peers and lords that did his cause uphold, with death, exile, or grievous fines oppressed. Neither lacked I aid in any wicked deed, for gaping gulls whom I promoted had would further all in hope of higher meed. A king can never imagine aught so bad, but most about him will perform it glad. For sickness seldom doth so swiftly breed, as vicious humours grow the grief to feed. Thus king's estate, of all be worst bestead, abused in wealth, abandoned at need, and nearest harm when they be least adread. My life and death the truth of this can try, for while I fought in Ireland with my foes, mine uncle Edmund, whom I left to guide my realm at home, right traitorously arose to help the Percy's plying my depose, and called from France Earl Bolingbroke, whom I condemned 10 years in exile to lie, who cruelly did put to death all those that in mine aid durst look but once awry, whose number was but slender, I suppose. For when I was come back this stir to stay, the Earl of Worcester, whom I trusted most, whilst we in Wales at Flint our castle lay, both to refresh and multiply mine host, did in my hall, in sight of least and most, bebreak his staff, my household office stay, bade each man shrift, and rode himself away. See, princes, see the power whereof we boast, whom most we trust, at need do us betray, through whose false faith my land and life I lost. For when my traitorous steward thus was going, my servants shrank away on every side. At court I was, and carried to my phone, who for their prince a prison did provide, and therein kept me, till Duke Henry's pride did cause me yield him up my crown and throne, which shortly made my friendly foes to groan, for Henry, seeing in me their falsehood tried, bored them all, and would be ruled by none, for which they sought to stop him straight atide. The chief conspired by death to drive him down, for which exploit a solemn oath they swore to render me my liberty and crown, whereof themselves deprived me before. But salves helped seld an overlong suffered sore. To stop the breach, no boot to run or roan when swelling floods have overflown the town. Till sails be spread, the ship may keep the shore, the anchors weighed, though all the freight do frown with stream and steer perforce it shall be bore. For though the peers set Henry in his state, yet could they not displace him thence again. And where they easily put me down of late, they could restore me by no manner pain. Things hardly mend, but may be marred amain. And when a man is fallen in froward fate, still mischiefs light in one another's pate, and well-meant means his mishaps to restrain wax wretched moans, whereby his joys abate, due proof whereof in me appeareth plain. For when King Henry knew that for my cause his lords in mask would kill him if they might, to dash all doubts, he took no further pause, but sent Sir Pierce of Exton, a traitorous knight to Pomfret Castle, with other armed light, who causeless killed me there against all laws. Thus lawless life to lawless death I draws. Wherefore bid kings be ruled and rule by right, who worketh his will and shunneth wisdom's sores, in flattery's claws and shame's foul paws shall light.
When he had ended this so woeful a tragedy, and to all princes a right worthy instruction, we paused, having passed through a miserable time full of piteous tragedies. But night was so near come that we could not conveniently tarry together any longer.
It is best, my masters, to stay here, for we be now come to the end of Richard II, his reign. Let us therefore for this time leave with him. And this day, seven night hence, if your business will so suffer, let us all meet here together again.
To this every man gladly agreed. Every man took his leave of other and departed. And I, the better to acquit my charge, recorded and noted all such matters as they had willed me.
If you've enjoyed this work, there is a post-show discussion coming soon, and a discussion of the book with its modern editor on the pod now. There's more William Baldwin action in Beware the Cat. Materials various, which I hope, fingers crossed, one day to tour soon. All these free things have links in the show description. Additionally, there are a host of exploring sessions on A Mirror for Magistrates, available for £5 tier level patrons, but also as a separate box set for a one-off price. And more coming every month. Supporting us on any level, on the Patreon or elsewhere, is a huge help, so it would be lovely to see you there. There's even a free subscription tier to keep up to speed with developments. patreon.com/beyondshakespeare. Alternatively, you can support us on ko-fi.com/beyondshakespeare, and links to all these are in the show description. Thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.